Hello and welcome to the Music Retailers Podcast. I'm your host, Donovan Bankhead, and together you and I are going to listen to and learn from some of my favorite instrumental music retailers, manufacturers, well, anyone else that I think would be interesting. My goal is to provide a podcast where you can learn something new in every episode.
In 1924, Calvin Coolidge was president of the United States, George Gershwin premiered his Rhapsody in Blue, Johnny Weissmuller brought home Olympic gold, and in a small neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York, Sam Ash opened his first music store. Sam Ash opened its first Manhattan location on 48th Street back in 1976, when the famed street was populated by some 30 independently owned stores, including Manny's Music and Rudy's Music Stop. Scores of music legends, the likes of Eric Clapton, Pete Townsend, and Jimi Hendrix were known to shop the street for guitars, amplifiers, effects, as well as drums, horns, or orchestral instruments and music. Over the past 40 years, one by one, these independent stores closed and Sam Ash Music expanded. Today we talk with Sammy Ash, Sam's grandson, about what it's like to be in a family-owned business and one which is the largest family-owned music chain in the world. Let's take a listen.
So the first thing I want to start with, Sammy, is I want to know what your background is and when did you get involved in the music business, the Sam Ash Music business?
Well, like any kid, I went kicking and screaming. I wanted to do what my friends did. I didn't want to work for my daddy. You know, that wasn't cool. So I parked some cars for a while. I pumped a little bit of gas because it was a Hess station. You got to wear the white overalls. But I had no money in my pocket. I was always broke. I didn't want to live on an allowance. So I started working on weekends when I was very young. You know, first you got paid by lunch. Then when I started 12 or 13, my father would pay me a few bucks. When I went 15, I went officially on the company. So I'm actually one of the longest employees, take out my father, my mother, and one other guy. I've been in the company actually technically longer than my brother. So this has been my life, and it's been a good one. I am glad I made the decision to go into my daddy's business and in some way make it a bit of my own. So I'm very proud of this.
So do you remember roughly what year it was that you got involved? What time frame are we talking about here?
1973.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
1973, I got my first official paycheck with a social security number on it. I remember that. I might even have it someplace. I'm not sure. And it wasn't a lot of money. You know, I was doing basement, warehouse, bathrooms, the same thing that my brothers did. I mean, my father made us literally start at the way bottom. You want to earn yourself onto the floor, you earn yourself onto the floor. I think I made my first sale at 12. So I remember it was a flute. And I was more blown away that these people actually listened to a 12-year-old. It just kind of blew my mind. I don't think I had a sale for another year after that. But, you know, it's been something. Like my sons, like my predecessors, and everybody else that's something in this company, we started on the bottom. You start in the warehouse, you start on basic sales or training, and you work your way through. I've been warehouse, I have been stock, I have been a driver at one time, salesman, sales manager, general manager, buyer, now I'm COO with about a half a dozen hats.
So all those responsibilities, was that all part of like this grand plan of like learning the whole business, or where was it more of like, you know, there's a leak over here, why don't you jump over there and fill it?
There never was a plan. At all. My father and my uncle, my father was going to be a chemist. He had no intention of coming into this business. My uncle wanted to turn this into the record business, not the musical instrument business. Mm-hmm. So everything that has happened over the past 95 years has been a little bit ad hoc as things go on. Oh, people like guitars. We should carry guitars. People like this, we should carry this. Oh, we're expanding the company. Who knows how to open stores? Oh, we're opening a website. Who knows how to do that? All of these things, everybody learned. I If I had any idea that I was going to be opening stores, converting stores, and doing all that, I would have taken a few architect programs when I was in college. I took marketing, but, you know, can I read a blueprint? Yes, I had to learn. But, you know, these are the things. In this business, as the business grew, the opportunities grew. For example, my son, Ben, who's in the room with me, he started in the warehouse.
How can be a good idea too sometimes, but sometimes who is a faster way to get there? And if there is someone, hey, I know someone that can do this, boom, let's go that way versus trying to, well, let me go and learn to be an architect and then and then I can open stores, you know?
There's a lot of talent in the family. There's a lot of talent in our support. The people that I surround ourselves with, we surround ourselves with in our office. You know, you got Barry Horowitz, the head of purchasing. He's been with us 49 years. Howie Mendelson, head of stores. He's been with us since 1975. You know, there are people, you know, my brother's been in it for 40 plus years. My other brother's been in it for 30 plus years. He's actually one of the few professionals we've ever hired. The one thing none of us could do was law. He was working for another law firm. We were paying the other law firm more than my brother was making. So my father said, how about I pay you what I'm paying the law firm and you come work for us? And that's how, because my brother could do leases. As the company started to expand, we were going to attorneys to do our leases and to do all these discoveries. No, I have a brother that's in real estate. He's a real estate attorney. Come in, bud. We need you. So that's another way the company expands.
So I think there's probably a lot of wonderful benefits working with family, but I would imagine there's also some challenges. What have been some of the challenges of working with so many family members in a business?
The best thing is working with the family. The worst thing is working with the family. it's tough. It is really tough. Everyone's got great ideas. Everyone wants the company to propel and excel and take it to the next level. Which one is right? Mm-hmm. And which one is wrong? And how does that person not get hurt by not taking their idea over another idea? The great thing is, with what's going on, almost every idea that's been coming up, there's a value to. There are ways that we can improve our presence online. There are ways that we can improve presence in store. There are ways that we can improve our merch, you know. So you start to focus to look at your structure. And is everybody who's doing their job doing the right job? Are they doing it the best that they can? I'm mm-hmm. pretty happy to say, yeah. I don't have any slackers in this company. If we did, they don't really stay long. But there are so many people in my business that have been with us for over 10 years. It's about 200 and plus people have been with us for over 10 years. I got 40-year people. I have lots of 30-year people. And this is how we grow our business. We depend on people. And usually we have a good response. We're pretty good at understanding how people think and work and what they can and cannot do. We don't want to promote somebody in a position that they're going to fail. That's counterproductive to everything. We try to listen to both our customers and our associates. We're not quite like the show Succession. We're not trying to kill each other in this business. We are way, way stronger together. I mean, I can't run this business. My brother can't run it without me. I can't run it without him. My other brother. There's not one person in this business who can make the company grow without all the other factors. And then right. I will stand by that.
So you mentioned your role as you're the COO. So you're the chief operations officer. Tell me kind of what your day-to-day looks like.
My day-to-day right now is a little bit different than last year and different than the year before. Last year, I was opening a store in Jacksonville and a distribution center in Las Vegas. So my days, quite often we're traveling. This year, I've had virtually little travel. So what is my day? What do? I am the head of used and vintage. I am the head of customer service. I am the head of the physical plants. If your toilet is busted, I'm sorry, but you got to ask my permission to get it fixed. I know it's weird, but you know, why is one toilet break $275, another one $1,500? No, guys, go back and take a look. The physical plant roofs, you know, I'm responsible for some 350 air conditioning systems.
Oh, my
God.
Lord.
Knows how many bathrooms. You know, when you have to change a carpet in the store, it's a $45,000 discussion. You know, these things, need carpet. No, there's a lot of things that go into the decision making on almost everything. The merchandising, the look, the physical properties, the roof, the carpet, the showcases. You have a store that's open for 20 years and it's shabby. If you haven't done anything, it just happens to be. Your glass showcases get scratched over time. Your carpet wears, your floors start to crack. There are expenses you have to make. Will they add business dollars? I don't know. Will they subtract? I do think so, because I don't like to shop in a shabby store. I don't think my customers do either. They don't want to see dirt on the floor. They don't want to see stains in the carpet. They don't want to see cracks in the tile. And the same thing, they don't want to see empty hooks either. They don't want to see a cymbal wall that looks like it's missing teeth. You know, there's an awful lot that we do. Part of my day-to-day is I am the head of used and vintage. We, about 10% of our business right now is used business. And I'm very happy to say that is intentional. It was about 5% some 8 years ago, and we decided to grow this business. And that fell upon me, very happy to say. And it's one of the most profitable ends of our company that we have. And so I get phone calls and emails all day long, because if you want to spend over $2,000 of the company's money, you have to speak to me first. You know, do you have a Les Paul Standard? Are you sure? You know, you're spending $2,500. I want to know it's not a forgery. I want to know it's a standard or a custom or a special. I want to know you're buying the proper product. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that. Special deals, customer calling. I go through what we call bird eye and take a look at all of our customer. I'm so happy to say 95% of every comment is 5-star. It's the 5% that's my job. The 5% that's not. Why? Where did we screw up? Who screwed up? How do we fix it? And that's all we care about. Not who did it, not why. How do we fix it?
Right.
Got a reputation. We have a customer that's in distress because of something that we did or we didn't do. Doesn't matter. We still have to attend to it. So that's part. Me tracking down things, connecting associates to sales, associates to stock, to purchasing. That's a part of my job. Part of my job is I deal with the public. I'm the only one that actually talks directly to the customer. If a customer has a complaint, the complaint comes to the office, it's handled by me, nobody else. We don't farm that. If it gets to me, it's pretty bad.
Right. You
know, usually it's at the store level or whatever, but if it gets all the way up to me, something happened and I don't want anyone else to deal with that. I don't want anyone else to take a second chance of messing up the experience. You got one chance to give a good positive reaction from a customer. And when you don't do that, the second time, you have to really dig deep to try to, you have to earn it back. You have to do whatever you have to do. This industry is great, but the competition is greater. It's expanding. It's bigger. And if you're going to stay complacent, then you're not going to attend to your customers. Your pie, your piece of that pie will get smaller.
What are some of the things that you do when a negative review or a negative situation with a customer has reached you? How do you personally handle that?
Depends. It could be a mail. It could be an email, mostly. Phone calls. It could be a letter. All are responded to. Letter gets a letter. An email gets an email. A phone call gets a phone call. Everybody gets responded to, period, within 24 hours. These are all very important things. You know, you go on and you listen to these various websites that grade you, and you take a listen and you hear what they have to say about other companies. And I don't want them saying it about us. I don't want people saying that these are deadbeats and they don't follow up and this family thing is nonsense. No, it's real. It's absolutely real. My grandfather set something up 90, 95 years ago, and we have not wavered from it once. I got two kids in the business. My brother's got three kids in the business. We got to keep this place running.
Right. Well, when your name's on the building and your family name's on the building and on the business and the website, you know, I think there's certainly a sense of responsibility that goes with it.
Absolutely. And we can't lose sight of it. And I think that the fourth generation, all five of them, have that instilled. You know, I got it from my dad. They got it from their dads. And, you know, we've only followed one line all this time. So it's not like they have to make up a story as to the company. They've been there at breakfast tables and at dinner tables and at NAMM shows. They understand the company, and I trust them with the company. That's a big thing. I trust my sons and I trust my nephews to do the right thing, and they do.
You trust them, but you also have to make sure that you're controlling the cost on fixing the toilets.
No, this is not an easy job. Music retail is not for the faint of heart.
Well, that's true. That's definitely true.
If you're not willing to work for a living, you're going to go out of business.
Yeah, that's true. Or you won't make any money, at least.
Okay, there's that.
I know a lot of people that are in business, but they're not making any money.
Well, it's not sustainable.
So going back to just some of like the physical things, you know, the toilets and all those kinds of things, at what point does something like get pushed up to your level when it becomes like a, you know, a plant repair or something like that? Is it literally anything, or is it anything that's over a dollar amount?
If you're spending company's money, you have to get permission from somebody, whatever it might be. If you're buying supplies, if you're buying repair parts, if you are buying anything. We used to have a problem years ago where things were rampant. You know, you have a lot of managers and you have a lot of buyers and you have a lot of people and there's no structure and nobody's following. And the next thing you know, you have a bit of anarchy and people are spending money on things they shouldn't be spending on and buying things they shouldn't be buying. So is there a lot of maintenance involved in my work and the other people in my office? Absolutely. But if you don't control costs, that can put you out of business. We're working on razor thin margins to begin with. If your costs go from the bottom up, that doesn't leave you much from the, you know, in between. So keeping costs down is a huge part of today's business. It can get crazy. My brother David is constantly working with the landlords and negotiating you know, rents and reductions wherever possible. We're constantly working with our suppliers about better freight rates or what, you know, we are constantly dealing with our parts suppliers and our repair suppliers. Everybody, it's a lot of, like I said, it's a lot of work. You have to come in prepared to do a day's work. And there's no way around it. What is that day?
Who knows?
Day is what that day is.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Who knows
right.
What's going to show up on my... Right now, I've got a stack of checks, which I just signed, and I got a stack of bills I have to look over. None of these checks and none of the bills have anything to do with purchasing. All of these bills have to do with the maintenance of the company, whether it be, I'm looking at repair parts bills, I'm looking at repair bills in general. That's way too big. That alone is a science that I truly don't understand, and I'm too busy to actually take it on. But you know, everybody is compartmentalized. My brother Richard, he's the overseer of all marketing and all purchasing. My brother David is the overseer of all web back office related equipment. You know, anything that has to do with insurance, anything that has to do with the computer system, anything that has to do with the bigger picture of running the company, nothing to do with sales, that's his engine. That's the whole back half of the company. And over time, I've turned out to be kind of like the face of the company because I like people. So it's just over time how things, when it was my father and my uncle, my father was the face of the business. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to, if you're a family business, you have to have somebody who's, you know, and my ego can handle it. You know, I happen to have a huge ego, and sometimes it's a little embarrassing for my kids. But in the meantime, I am the communicator.
Yeah. So,
and I appreciate the fact that you, I guess, saw that. So
you had mentioned that you've doubled your used business, and many of us in this industry are, you know, kind of jumping on that bandwagon too for the, you know, as a great way to add revenue and then also profits. Share with us some of the things you did to get that increase in business.
First of all, we buy everything. Doesn't matter. If it's a musical instrument and it works, we'll buy it. Everything has a price. Maybe not necessarily what the customer wants to get, but everything has a price. And we pay quite fair. We made a decision at one time that nobody can lowball. We have to, the customers have to realize when they want to trade in with us that you can buy from us, you can sell to us, you can trade to us. So this has been a big part of what's going on. It's a huge traffic builder. Like I said, I'll buy anything. You want to come to me with a Yamaha student clarinet, you want to come to me with a bar Buffet R13 Festival, don't care. You've got an Epiphone Les Paul Standard, you got a Gibson 1980s Les Paul Custom, I want that too. I want it if it plays, because everything is variety. Mm-hmm. Customers now come in. The stores that truly, truly get it, and I got some amazing used stores, have customers that they see weekly that come in to see. Oh, you know, I will buy and sell between 1,700 and 2,000 items a week. So that's a lot of gear that shuffles through the system. That's not the standard Les Paul, Stratocaster, Ibanez, so on and so forth. It's different. It's unique. You know, could be vintage, could be oddball, could be used, but it's not the same thing that's on the web and on catalogs and all that. It's unique stuff that comes in every day. You know, you also, if you're on a budget, you can afford the new clarinet. Okay, well, I have a very suitable used alternative. And that's in every single department. Cymbals, drums, audio, PA gear, it doesn't matter. If the customer knows that you're going to cherry pick and you're going to lowball, eventually that business is going to go to crap. There's a reputation involved in buying as well. It's like anything else. And our reputation is stellar and it grows. What propelled it to this point? We started marketing ourselves better in the stores and out of the stores, getting the word out that Sam Ash Music wants to buy your gear. We've now started putting our ads online. We also go direct to the customers with, you know, if you have a mobile device, you get a web, you an Instagram post, you press it, it calls the store. You can go online and you can see what the store has in stock. You don't even have to come into us to see all of our gear. Mm-hmm. So, but the used aspect is as much a profit builder as customer service. It really is. Customers have this gear. They don't know what to do with it. They don't want to throw it away. It might have some sentimental value to it. You know, I just bought a gorgeous Selmer, Super Action tenor. I paid $8,000 for it.
Holy cow.
But it's worth it because I will get $12,000 or $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 for that horn because it's that great. It's that perfect. Mm-hmm. But who else is going to drop $8,000 on a saxophone?
Right.
I'm buying and selling Mark Sixes every week. You know, I am Bach and Buffet and Kahn. And all of those instruments, we buy and sell them every week because nobody else is spending the money. I have technically an unlimited budget for used gear. My inventory is great. Every year we go through it. We close things out. We take a look at the oldest stuff that hasn't moved. And we'll either short it out or blow it out or give it away to keep the inventory fresh and clean. You know, something that's been used, that's been on the floor for 10 years. Okay, that is done. It's dead. If it's been there and nobody wants it after 10 years, you have to find that price to get rid of it or literally short it out and get rid of it. The inventory has to be fluid. You have to buy it at a reasonable price. You can't ask more than what the internet will allow, which is a factor because everybody's plugging into the internet now. You can go on Reverb, you can go on eBay, and you can look at a YCL 250, and you know, and you could see a variety of prices from 149 to 559 used. Mm-hmm. I want to be in the lower end. I want to be where the customer can see the value and the difference of price between new and used. And I might have three of that clarinet. I might have all three at different prices, depending on the condition of the horn. So each purchase is a individual thing. And I have some great managers who know how to buy and they know how to merchandise. And it's become a big thing for us. It's you know, it's not quite as big of a drum business. It's pretty close.
Yeah. You had mentioned a little bit about, you know, kind of inventory aging and when it's time to cut your losses and move along. Do you know, what's your markdown strategy? How many birthdays, how long does something sit before you begin your markdown process? And what does that look like?
No set rule, no set year. You know, if it's eye candy, if it's super, super cool, I'll let it sit a while. Let people ogle it. Wow, look at that. If it's not, I mean, as we go through our yearly, currently there's approximately 25,000 items in the used database. So when we go through it, we go through it by time, oldest to newest. Mm-hmm. And we work it that way. But it's difficult because each instrument, I will allow shorter times or longer times, depending on, like I said, candy. If it's a Mark VI saxophone that is out, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not dying to sell it. I'll sell it eventually. I might lower my price, but when people walk in and they see that instrument, they're someplace else. They're not just in any Joe Schmo music store.
Right.
You know, we that was a terrible thing for me to say. That was not meant to be. What I'm saying is we really invest in our used gear and invest in our used policies. And the stores understand that, and it's a great way. See, our guys are buyers by virtue of what they are, but they're not allowed to buy new gear. There's no haggling on buying new gear. It's not in there. They don't, gear shows.
Right.
But used gear, they're back being salesmen.
And right.
I just saw, we just did an $8,000 deal and a whole, like, I don't know, 125 pieces of drums and cymbals. And it's a great deal. It was a great deal. But it took a lot of work to put all that together and to make sure it was profitable for us and reasonable for the customer. But it is... You know, I don't mind telling everybody because I'm really not. There's so much used gear in this country that I don't mind telling everybody to go buy the used business, get into it because it's there. It's an alternative to the customer and it is a great profit sector.
That's right. So how many stores are in the Sam Ash family currently?
There are 45 free standalone stores. There is a drum store. We have three distribution centers. We have a fulfillment service, a very large fulfillment service down in Tampa. We have, and the physical office is here in Hicksville. So there's a lot. But right now we consider, if you want to talk brick and mortar stores, 45.
So, which is a crazy amount. I mean, I've got six locations and it's, you know, wears me out.
We had six locations. That's okay.
That's what I want to talk about.
Your job is not an easy job. I'm not comparing the two, but I am telling you, I've been down where you were in that sense with, it's actually harder to run six stores, I think, than 45 because you're way more on the stick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm often the delivery driver, the sales trainer. I mean, I'm doing all this stuff, you know. Yeah, exactly.
And also, the buck stops with you.
That's true. No, that's definitely true.
Somebody else. So.
So, what are the challenges of operating 45 stores and three distribution centers and fulfillment centers and so on and so forth that most people would find surprising?
Communication is the biggest part. I mean, trying to get your message out or talk to individual stores or talk to individual departments. we've set it up that I can send an email just to my guitar associates or just to my drum associates. I can send an email just to my sales managers. I can send one email to everybody at one time. For example, if there's a celebration, recently our Atlanta store won Best in Atlanta. I want everyone to know. So I took the Best of Atlanta email and I broadcast it to everybody. But there are certain things I don't want everybody to know. There's certain things I don't want this department to know that that department, or I want to keep it fun that I'm giving you guys a contest and, you know, and it's just for guitars or whatever it might be. Communication is super tough. We've got 1,600 full-time employees and another 300 full and part-time teachers. So we're constantly talking, I guess. If the moment you shut up, things start get a little weird. So it's just, you know, and everybody has to communicate. All the buyers and all the people in IT, everybody, if you have a question, you get an answer. It's not, and I don't like the answer to be no or yes. I like the answer to be no and why, or yes and why, as opposed to no. We have great communication in this business. And if the people understand the question and the answer, they're more comfortable with it. As a whole, can I buy this? No. Go to the customer. I'm sorry. No. Why? If I explain that we can't buy that and the reason we can't buy that for whatever it might be, at least the salesman has something to tell the customer. And if we want to buy it, I'm going to dress it up and I'm going to explain why we want to buy it and how cool it is and what great thing they have and educate my salesman as to what he's buying, making him a better salesman. But the whole used business, I mean, the whole this business of running this, it's, you know, it's not me, it's us.
Right.
And thank God there's a lot of us.
Well, and it's us, like, you know, everything from the sales associates and forward. And when you talk about communication, like, it has to not just be from the top down, it's got to be sideways and bottom up. And, you know, I mean, I think it's just a challenge. You know, it's funny to hear you say that, because I think if you have one store with two employees, communication is going to be a challenge.
Oh, absolutely.
In a different way, but like, especially it's just one like of the biggest other. Issues.
Yeah, especially if they don't like each other. It really becomes difficult. Yeah.
So other than email, do you have any other tools that you guys use to improve communication? Have you tried things like Workplace from Facebook or any of those types of things?
We have regional managers that talk directly to the office and to Howie, and they, when a program comes out, they bring the program to the stores. So instead of me telling 45 locations something, they will be able to, in a smaller setting, be able to tell their six stores or their seven stores in their meeting and in their environment. Same thing goes for the web people. You know, they're dealing with a different type of clientele. They don't see their customer. They have to react differently than a customer that's in your face. And explaining that and teaching that. The basic thing that we teach is we're Sam Ash Music. We've been around 95 years. We run an honest house. We give the customer a fair deal. We expect a fair deal in exchange. We don't rip you off. We will give you justice. And that's why we're still here. In my opinion, I mean, I can think about a good 30 stores that have been, that told us we're putting you out of business and they're all gone. And in some cases, we bought them. And in some cases, we assimilated with them. You know, I remember when Mars was the biggest threat on the earth to this industry, I ended up buying 9 of their stores. I mean, so everything works differently. You never know how things are going to go. You know, Mars was doing their thing. It didn't make sense to us. We do our thing, always. We can't be focusing on what Guitar Center does or this one does. They're going to do it anyway. We watch what they do, but we can't be concerned about it because they're going to do it. All we have to do is figure out how we want to react to it.
So what negative situation have you experienced in your career that profoundly affected you or your business, but you would not want to repeat it again?
I need you to be a little bit more specific. I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
So I'm thinking like something that you would not want, you know, something that happened in the history, in Sam Ash's history and your history that had ultimately had a positive outcome, but at the time was very difficult and you would not ever want to repeat it?
My grandfather's passing. When my grandfather passed, my father was no businessman. My uncle was no businessman. They were guys who grew up upstairs of a music store. My father went to the army. My uncle went to the army. When my grandfather passed away 60 some odd years ago, they didn't know what they were doing at all. You know, this was a company that did not have debt because my uncle, my grandfather would not have debt. These guys took on debt. These guys expanded the company. My father got an ulcer from worry. I mean, all of these things took place that my uncle, my grandfather died. But because my grandfather died, the company did take on debt to expand. The company did take on more lines, which we were limited to do due to size and frankly, mental attitude. My grandfather was not a grand man in terms of business. He was a violinist. He was an entertainer and all of those things. A businessman, he was not.
Mm-hmm.
And my father did not go to business school or my uncle. But I'm sorry to say, but my grandfather's passing allowed this company to grow.
That's profound. All right. And so finally, if you could send a message to yourself 10 years ago, what would you tell the younger you other than get going on the website? So that's that.
Honestly, 10 years
2009.
Ago, it's not that much different. It really isn't. Maybe 20 years ago, what would I do?
Well, let's do 20 because, yeah, but that's 62. You've got a lot of experience here. So let's make it 20.
Okay. Well, 20 years ago.
That's going to be 1999.
20 years ago was the Mars acquisition, Music to the Max, the beginning of the Manny's acquisition. We may have, at that time, we may have bitten off a little more than we could chew because we were, when we added Mars, we added 9 stores in 1 year. Large, large stores. When we took over Third Red, we added 5 in 1 year. Manny's is this whole entity unto itself. I wish I had 20 years ago. I wish I had people who actually understood this. I was the guy, I'm the store builder. I'm doing all of that. And suddenly somebody says, okay, you've got to take 9 stores and assimilate them into Sam Ash speak, change signs, do all of that. I didn't have a clue on how to do it. We did it. But if I had known that this was going to happen, I would have probably brought somebody into the company that had a better understanding of company expansion. But
yeah.
Frankly, we're kind of cheap, so we try to do it all. No, I'm serious. I am serious. We really are. But that has allowed us to sustain. I mean, frugal is probably a better word than cheap.
But cheap might be more accurate.
Hey, you don't have to spend $150,000 on a guy that can expand the company. You can do it, right? you do what you have to do.
Yeah, I've been there. I totally get it.
I know.
All right. And then what do you want to tell the future self, your future self, 10 or 20 years in the future? What message would you like to pass forward to the future you?
I'm hoping the message that I'm sending now will be that message in 20 years. I hope that this organization will still be a family-held business and following the specific opportunities and the way that we've conducted ourselves. I mean, it's managed to go, we're in 4 generations. The 4th generation truly understands the Sam Ash ethic. I'm hoping that they'll be here in 20 years to make sure that same message is going out, that there's no waiver for the way we do business, the way we treat our customers, the way we treat our suppliers. This is just one way. It's been serving us well. No reason to deviate, no reason to lie, no reason to cheat. As my father taught me a long time ago, you want to sleep at night, pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. We pay our taxes. I sleep at night. We talked about women in the business. There's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to only have 1 woman general manager. She happens to be one of the best I have, but I only have 1. I would like to have more. I would like to have more women in my sales business. I'd like to have more women in our marketing department. there's that aspect that can't be explained any other way excepting having more female understanding of the female population working in the company. That,
right.
That is something that, you know, we're always looking for dynamic women that can come in and grow with the company, start in sales. Sarah Massey, who runs our Richmond store, one of the best stores we have, she started out, I think, as a keyboard salesman, and she just runs a fantastic business. If I could clone her, I would. She's clearly one of the best I have. It's not a matter of, is it a woman thing? It's a matter of, there are not enough women coming into the business. If I take a look at all my applications, like I said, maybe 10%, 15% are going to be women. It's not a matter of not wanting to hire them. It's a matter of the workforce not applying.
I think that that's certainly a challenge. We've had success in this area. And for us, I think that you have to kind of get to this tipping point where you have women working in your business. And then when you have women working in your business, other women can then picture themselves working there and then they apply. And, but if you get yourself beyond that tipping point where you don't have it, it's very, very difficult. And I the only explanation I have is I just think that women, if they look at a business or interact with a business and they don't see other women working there, they just don't see themselves working there. We have women in leadership positions. I mean,
into a seedy male bar. I mean, you know, they don't want to be there.
Yeah. Well, and like in our case,
is growing.
Yeah, we've had women store managers. I don't have one at the moment. But the two women that run this business with me on the, you know, the kind of the day to day, like they're, you know, they're right at the top with me running this thing. And we've always been very open-minded and forward to thinking about that. And matter of fact, not just, you know, willing to accept women in our business, but wanting that diversity that they can bring. They bring a different skill set to your business, and people with a diverse background. It's been so tremendous for us, and I'm with you. I encourage more women to be involved, and that's why we support the SWIM initiative through NAMM, the Smart Women in Music.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, and I've donated to that and do whatever I can to help. I think I was raised by my mother in a single parent household. And so I've got
More respect. You understand it more.
Exactly. Exactly. So talking about your stores, how would you describe the culture of your stores? And is that culture different than maybe the culture that you have in the company? So the stores, I'm thinking like the, you know, physical, if I'm working inside of a store, what's that culture like? And is it different than what you think the culture is for Sam Ash as a whole?
Well, a lot of the culture has to do with the general manager of that location. We have a culture. It's rich. It's long. It's strong. And most of our people understand it and embrace it. And those that truly do can explain it to their people. And the key is, I'm never going to destroy that. I'm never going to turn our back on our people. I'm never going to throw them out and throw them under a bus to a customer or anything like that. They have to understand the company has their back when they are right, and the company still has their back when they're wrong, to fix the problem together. So that's a big thing. The culture comes from standardization. This is who we are. This is how you will act in our stores. And if you will not act that way, we will figure a way to get rid of you. Because either customers are going to tell me I got a rat bastard working here, or or whatever it might be, we will work on getting you out, because I want specific human types in our business. I want people who are engaging. I want people who are alive, that have a brightness in their eye, chance to want to make more money, because we're on a commission basis, but you can't, there's no caps. So I do have salesmen that are making a lot of dough, seriously. And I got salesmen that are struggling, because the ones that are struggling are not using the tools that we give them. You can be successful in my organization. And yes, there's a lot of family, but it doesn't mean you cannot grow in this business either. As the company grows, the family doesn't get any bigger. We stay stagnant. Okay. But as the company grows, the people that are important to the company, their stature increases. And that's what we're trying to do, to understand that you can have a career in working for Sam Ash Music, that we don't want to use you and spit you out. We don't want to train you and then fire you. We want to train you. If it's not working, we want to continue to train you. We want to give you a path to succeed. And that's one of the reasons that we have some of the greatest longevity in our stores. And our people tell the story. You know, you have a store manager that, you know, I'm going to throw a name out. I'm going to throw a Sandu Lee, who runs our King of Prussia store. He was with me building the store, training the staff. He understands the way I do things, the family does things, the way we want things, the type of people that we want, the honesty, the musicianship, the ability to communicate to a customer. I don't need you if you're happy living in your basement, taking $250 a week for a bag of weed and a night with your girl. I don't need you working for me, okay? I need you to be serious. I want you to try to make more money. The more you, because, you know, the more you make, the more I make.
Yeah.
Kind of tied together there. So I'm not, you know, we're interested in keeping that culture alive. And I think we do a pretty good job. I really do. I'm not out in the stores like I used to be, but, you know, my travel schedule, I'm the company traveler. I don't get to stores like I used to get to. My fault, seriously. But I communicate with all our managers. I know every manager I have by face and name. I've known them all. I've met them all. Most of my sales managers and a good deal of my associates. So they know that they're not faceless. You can that's another thing. You can contact me. I don't care who you are. You don't have to go through a manager to talk to Sandy Ash. You know, a salesman that doesn't feel like he's getting justice or whatever, or the proper tools to can get in touch with me by email. Every single store has a poster of my ego face playing guitar. And it states, we want to tell our, it states, we're very happy that you shopped at Sam Ash Music. We'd love to hear from you, good or bad. Here is my email address. Here is my direct line to my phone. Please give me a call. That's in three posters in three places in every Sam Ash Music store. I don't know anybody else that has put themselves out there like that. You can get to me and you can understand. You can talk to an Ash and figure out what's going on.
So you mentioned that you're not visiting stores as much. What do you feel like some of the ramifications are for that, especially if that continues, of not having your presence in the stores as regularly?
It's more my lack of understanding than theirs. I mean, me not being in the stores, I have to be in the stores to understand what the stores are going through, what mm-hmm. their trials and tribulations are, what the customers are asking for. We have people that started with us, that have been with us for very long, that communicate that. Our regional managers have been with us all a very, very long period of time. They're all terrific people, smart. Most of them started salesmen in the company. So they get it, and mm-hmm. they understand us. Plus, last year, and we're planning another one this year, we had a very large managers meeting where we had every general manager come in. We brought my dad in for it. We had lunch and dinner and breakfast the next day. We spent and talked. We broke out into sessions. That contact, it's brief and it's fleeting. But it's meaningful.
Right.
I can't get into the stores. I try to get the stores into me.
I love that. I find for me, it's such an important part of our cultures for me to be in the stores. And I feel like I learned that lesson the hard way, because back when we just had a single store and my office was in that store, you know, it was very easy for me to have an impact on culture. And then as we opened more locations and moved our office out of a store, I just noticed that it was very difficult for the culture to be the culture I wanted it to be, because I wasn't as present. And so I've worked hard, you know, over the years just to try to my goal is to try to be in at least one of our locations once a week, and not all of them, but just, you know, one at a time.
Yeah, that's
and, important. And, you know, our stores are on average, you know, roughly 3 hours or so apart from each other. So it's not like, you know, it's something I can just quickly do. But, and I usually drive up and drive back the same day. So you've got 6 hours or more of driving plus whatever time you spend in the store. And it's a lot of work, but I feel like it's worth it.
It is. And the, my problem is 75% of my stores I have to fly to.
Right.
Well, which I do. I, you know, I am a 2 million miler with American Airlines. I am medallion, platinum, whatever it is, with Delta. I am a lifetime titanium with Marriott. I've lived with Marriott for over 3 years. So it, that, you know, I kind of like staying home sometimes.
I don't blame you.
But
I don't blame
a little you. Bit of me not visiting the stores is absolute laziness. No question about it. I do need to get out there. I'd like to get out there. You know, it's kind of cold in Chicago. I'd rather go to Florida. So,
is there another Ash that could do it? Because who's going to do it in the future?
Well, right now, it's not as important. We're not expanding at the moment. I do have a nephew that's in that does all of our East Coast. He's the regional manager of about 8 stores. So we get a tremendous feedback from a family member that's actually out there. You know, I was bringing back all that information when I was doing all my years of traveling. But we have, like I said, communication. We speak to our people by, you know, as often as possible and as deeply as we can. We really want them to understand our thought process on when we give you an answer, why.
Yeah.
That's very important.
All right. And then what's the best part of being Sammy Ash?
Being Sammy Ash?
Mm-hmm.
That's the best part, being Sammy Ash. You know, I've got this famous name that I honestly have traded upon, no question about it. When I was very young, it was very difficult being Sammy Ash. I remember once an irate customer was in the store, wanted to speak to Sam Ash, and they thought it'd be funny to bring this 9-year-old kid out from the basement. I'm terrified. But over the years, I started to embrace this name that I was given, I didn't earn, and I've tried, I think, to earn the responsibility of having that name over the years. I understand the power of my name. I try not to abuse it. It's gotten me into a couple concerts and things like that. But you know, it's, I am Sammy Ash, but what am I? I happen to be one of the foremost guitar experts in this country. I'm gonna state that. And I think a lot of people in this guitar industry know that. And I have used that to work with most of the manufacturers and guitars and design stuff. I have used my name to improve. Like I said, I am being Sammy Ash. I became the face of the company. It just kind of happened. And I think I try to portray that as best as I can. I took this situation and I think I took a lemon and made a tremendous lemonade. I'm very proud that I am Sammy Ash. I don't abuse the privilege of being Sammy Ash. I remember that I am just an Ash in this business and that Sammy Ash does not run this company. This company is not owned by Sammy Ash. It's a family business. We mm-hmm. all either, we all do better or do worse together. And that's how that is. But yeah, it's kind of cool. I will absolutely admit that, you know, I've had people ask me for my autograph, which I think is kind of freaky. I had a guy come in the other day from Pennsylvania so that I can sign his Martin that I designed 2 years ago. And I told him, I don't want to do it. I don't want to sign your guitar. He insisted. He came to the office. He took pictures. I had this horrible signature on the inside of a D35. That's embarrassing, but you wanted it anyway. You know, there are things like that. I'm Sammy Ash and he's Chris Martin. He's Bob Taylor. And I don't know. I use it.
Yeah.
I hopefully I'm using it deftly, properly, respectfully in the terms of what's best for this company.
What's the hardest part of being Sammy Ash?
That everybody expects you to be Sammy Ash, that I am the end all be all of this company because my name is Sammy Ash, that I am the chief cook, bottle washer, and everything else. And that is not true. That is far stretched from the imagination.
Right.
I am one of the many cogs in this business that makes it work. I just happen to be the one with the name.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. If you'd like help with your business, check out musicretailconsulting.com for articles, resources, and coaching and consulting services. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast so you're aware of future updates and rate and review while you're at it. Thanks for listening.
At Springfield Music, we started using Merchant Cost Consulting earlier this year. These guys are former banking and credit card reps who go and negotiate your processing rates on your behalf. Now, like most of you, we're pretty aggressive about shopping our processing rate around, so I wasn't sure they'd be able to save us much money. But boy, was I wrong. On average, they're saving us about $600 a month. The deal is we split it 50-50 with them for so many months, and after that, all the savings are ours to keep. Plus, they keep an eye on your fees during this time to make sure those freaking credit card processors don't find a way to jack up your rate again. They're good folks, and they do what they say they do. Actually, in our case, they underpromised and over-delivered. They estimated about $500 a month in savings, and it's been closer to $600. When you contact Patrick at Merchant Cost Consulting, tell him that Donovan Bankhead sent you. This does two things. One, they will pay me a slight referral commission. But more importantly, two, you'll get 10% off of your first month's bill if you choose to go with them after their free analysis. Listen, I wouldn't recommend it to you if it wasn't worth it. It'll only take a few minutes of your time. They handle the rest. Contact Patrick McClellan. His email is patrick@merchantcostconsulting.com. P-A-T-R-I-C-K at merchantcostconsulting.com. I'll even give you a cell phone number, 508-733-7622. And remember, tell them that Donovan sent you.
So you bring up Guitar Center, and you know, obviously you guys are, I mean, if I'm correct, you guys are the second largest music chain. Is that correct?
We are the largest family-owned music chain in the world. We are the second largest chain in the United States.
Okay. So how do you feel like your business is different from the other national competitor?
It's our money. We have to be more careful. It's not OPM. We make a mistake. I can't go back to somebody and say, oh, I screwed up. Can I have some more dough? This is our money. This is something, any decision that's made, store openings, website expansions, anything we do, we talk about it. You talk about like Guitar Center. Is there a plan to put us out of business? I don't know if they're worried about it anymore, but it used to be. I think their plan now is to stay in business and do whatever they have to do. We don't hate them. We don't understand them. I'm a student of the music industry and music stores. I used to have a handle on Guitar Center. I have no clue as to what they're doing. Their expansion doesn't make sense. The only thing that makes sense in that whole organization is music and arts. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of admiration for that. Mm-hmm. That really is a good organization. It really is.
You know, I don't have the breadth of experience that you have, but when I look at Guitar Center, I have the same feeling. I don't understand if maybe I understand music and arts. I understand what music and arts is doing, so that makes sense to me. And what GC does, I don't understand, and that's why it doesn't make sense. Or I can't figure out what GC is doing because it's a freaking idiot that's running it making horrible mistakes stupidity run rampant.
Stable for a few years now, but remember, there was a time we went through five CEOs in 8 years, which really spun a lot of heads.
Yeah.
What is going on with that organization? Ron Jepinga, don't know the guy. I don't know if I recognize him, but at least there's been one person, one face of the organization for some time now. So I look at, if nothing else, I consider that a bonus. I mean, now you know who you work for.
Yeah.
You can't write his name down in pen, write it down in pencil because you have to erase it. You know, that kind of stuff. It's like the old Gibson days.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you never wrote anything down in pen. You wrote it down in pencil so it could erase easy. but, you know, the competition is there. The competition is getting better. Sweetwater is great and strong. Guitar Center is strong. A lot of these independents that are out there, a lot of these guitar stores and independent focused music stores are getting better and they are getting stronger. So the competition, actually the competition where it's strongest is high end.
Yeah.
Expensive horns, expensive guitars. There are so many people selling PRS and Martin and Taylor and high end stuff, $2,000 and above. I don't know. I mean, I do a great business in that business. That's called our Guitars of Distinction program. And it's terrific. But I'm trying to understand, you've got some great dealers. There's a dealer out there that I know, he's got about 200 PRSs on display. I don't have 200 PRSs, I don't think, right now. Yeah. If I put them all together, but I don't have 200 PRS core, I don't think. But I'm selling them.
Yeah.
But there are dealers out there that are very serious, and they've upgraded their stores and they've gotten way more serious. So we have to. I mean, I put a lot of money into our streets and changes and things like that, because we have to be, like we discovered, you can't be shabby. You can't be shabby, and you must have the proper gear as well. Everything you do wrong is a detractor. If you look shabby, okay. If you don't have the gear, if you have lousy people, all of these things, everything. I'd like to say everything is a focus, but.
If everything's a focus, then nothing's a focus.
I want to do touch on one thing.
Sure, go ahead.
Makes us a little bit different is, you know, people like us. You know, we bought a lot of music stores because they'd rather sell to us than somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
George, just recently, we were working with him. We just recently took over his store down in Jacksonville. Why? Because we like George. George likes us. There's a mutual respect. So he talked to us when it came to taking over Manny's, when it came to taking over a number of music stores. They came to us because we aren't going to rip them off. It's not in our DNA. And that's something that that was just reminded me by my son, is that is something different. People don't look at us weary as, oh, are they going to screw me? They may not understand us because we're different than everyone else, but at least they have confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of how we get across.
Yeah. That feeling of trust, that they can trust you.
Absolutely.
Well, I know what you mean. I mean, the stores that we've acquired have been the same thing, you know, and I think I just figured out years ago that, you know, I'd rather be friendly with all the people I'm competing with. And, you know, I want to win, but if at the end, if I win or if I lose, I want to be able to be the kind of person that can go out for a beer with my competitors and, you know, talk about what went right and what went wrong. And I just didn't want it to be so adversarial all the time. And so I've tried to use that.
Absolutely. I can't agree with you more on that. Absolutely. There's no reason. I don't think I have any enemies in this business. I have a few people I don't like, but I think I and my family get the respect that we have earned.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, people look at us and hopefully business is your business. It's got your stamp on it. You want it to be pristine. Same thing with us.
Mm-hmm.
We want the people to understand we're not quite the same as everybody else. Give us a chance. You will not be unhappy.
Well, and I've, you know, found that not only has it, you know, made my life less stressful and I feel like a better person for that kind of mindset, but, you know, I feel that I get a lot more opportunities maybe than other people do. I mean, the stores that we've purchased, people have reached out to us and, you know, generally if someone reaches out to me, I at least try to arrange a time to meet with them, even if it's just, online. And when I look at those deals, even if I'm not looking at purchasing something, my first goal is to try to find some way to be of help to this person who's selling their store. And maybe sometimes you're helping them by giving them a realistic picture of what, you know,
value would be. Sometimes you're helping, you know, by giving them some advice on things they can do to make their store more profitable so that they could sell it. But, you know, just trying to help them. And we've had a variety of creative deals. And I think probably like you, you know, there hasn't been a single way that we've bought a store. You know, that I feel like each deal has been kind of different based on what the seller or the owner needed. And you try to do what's best for them and what's good for you and, you know, kind of make it a win-win.
Well, this is a way more relationship-based industry than a lot of people understand. And I'm sorry to say, but the fact is, the better the relationship, the more time and effort I'm going to give you.
Yeah.
It really comes down to that way. And that's a situation that is real. This is my job. This is what I do. I'm a human being. And frankly, I like you better. I might give you more attention. That's
yeah.
just how it is. And we have reps that come into our office every week that we've known for years and years and years. And they understand the relationship end of the business and how to make that work. And then you get somebody who comes in cold with a bunch of facts and figures and, okay, I'll buy three, you know, that kind of thing. There's a lot of that. Now, obviously, I'm not telling you something that you don't know.
Sure. No, I think many of us feel that way. And, you know, there's always demands on your time. So you've got to be wise with how you allocate it and spend it. And you're going to spend it with people you trust. So.
Absolutely. I don't have time to waste. I really don't. So
clearly it's taken 62 emails to get this podcast to happen. So.
Once again, I am sorry for that. Thank you for being tenacious.
Oh, no, it's worth it. It's worth it. So we've spent quite a bit of time talking about what's right with our industry. What are some of the things you think that are wrong with our industry, or if wrong is the wrong word, maybe, you know, things that you would like to see change in our industry?
I'd like the manufacturers to get out of the selling business.
Amen to that.
You know, not thrilled about Fender and their Fender Play thing. I think it's nonsense. We've told them that. They've told us things that don't jive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it that's this disingenuous thing of, well, you're going to teach the world to play and take 10% out of your pocket just to stick it to you. You know, and expect me to have a huge inventory of their product on display.
Yeah.
Okay. We do. We're a Fender dealer. We're a proud Fender dealer. But they're making it, you know, that's a company that makes relationships difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm looking now at Gibson. It's been adversarial for decades. JC, I think he could be the goods. A little too soon. But everything he's been doing and saying has come out true. So there are things in this business that, you know, am I looking to do things with more companies than others? Absolutely. There's no question about it. I have to enjoy what I am doing. I have to do it all, but those I enjoy more, and that's how life is, get the benefit.
Right. So you mentioned Fender Play, which for those who are not familiar, it's Fender's online lesson program, of which they will allow dealers to sell some of the initial access to that program for a small commission, but then any renewals beyond that go straight to Fender. You know,
you got to say the most important part for the uninitiated is it also allows them to buy Fender product from Fender direct at 10% below what I'm supposed to sell it for. And that's the part that bothers us. We have a MAP price and they break, well, they don't break it, but they're selling it direct.
Yeah.
It's kind of counterproductive on a brick and mortar situation.
They're saying that their reason for creating this Fender Play product was that there's, you know, the majority of people who begin playing guitar put it away quickly, never take lessons, and don't stick with it. And so by offering this product, they're hoping that they can increase the retention rate and create more musicians and guitar players down the road.
There's this thing called YouTube, and there's every lesson you could possibly want if you wanted to play. That's the thing. It's got to be the desire. Fender's not going to create the desire. The desire is there. And if the desire is there, there's a million outlets to learn how to play. I go to the internet to learn how to play. I mean, now there's all these master classes that are out there. There are all these ways to learn. So, like I said, I think it's a little disingenuous what they're trying to sell. I understand it. I totally do. I'm not sure it's worth their efforts to piss off the industry like this.
You know, it doesn't seem like it has been. I mean, none of those initiatives have seemed to be very successful, that at least from what they're telling us.
Usually they're not. And the numbers we hear just don't pan out. 50% of the population, female population, is going to expand this business. Walk into any of my stores on a Saturday, it's still going to be 1 girl to 10 walking in my doors. Period. Not 5 to 5, 1 to 10. Just how it is. And, you know, like I said, I'm willing to camp out in any music store, and that's how it is. It's a male dominated. I understand they think they're going to bring more women in. I just don't see how.
Right. We'll shift gears here for a little bit. So sure. Tell me about one of your biggest challenges and how did you overcome it?
Honestly, we didn't take the internet seriously enough in its early days. You know, we were building a catalog business, and you know, that's something that Chuck Sorak saw early on, mm-hmm. which is why he is so successful as he is. We're a brick and mortar company, so we're always trying to improve the brick and mortar, and suddenly this thing, the internet, comes in and you have to embrace it. And you have to learn about it and all of that. And well, you know, we're really a brick and mortar company. So we're going to put our efforts and time into that. So we were late to the party with the great website. We were late to the party with the fulfillment abilities, the distribution. We have all that now, but it takes time to get that to build.
When right.
it comes to brick and mortar, you know, we're pretty solid. But yeah, that is something. If you had three analog brothers, an analog father and an analog uncle, and it took us to become digital. It took some time. And that is something I absolutely lament.
I feel like our website's been the bane of my career as well. I mean, 18 years ago when I came to Springfield Music, you know, our website was, you know, just a billboard website. We knew it needed to be more. And I've struggled to get it where it should be. You know, we're working on it right now and making progress, but I totally agree with you. My heart and love is more in that interaction with customers and the one-on-one and, you know, seeing people in the stores. And so I've spent most of my time and energy and resources there, but not focusing on the online component the way we should, especially the website has been a big mistake on my part that we're trying to address now. But if I could go back and change anything, that'd probably be the thing I would change.
It would be a big change for both of us. Absolutely. There's not a tremendous amount of regrets that we've had in terms of what's gone on in our business. So I'm not going to really lament we didn't do this, we didn't do that. All the acquisitions that we had over the years, we didn't plan on, but became successful. I'm not going to really complain about the past. I really can't. We've had way, way more successes than failures. And some of the failures are so small and petty, it doesn't even pay to bring up. So if I'm going to go with one, I'm going to go with the internet.
Yeah, I'll join you. So only a few more questions here. So where do you see Sam Ash in the next 3 years and the next 10 years?
In the next 3 years, you will see, first of all, a greatly, greatly improved website. We are putting a lot of finances and a lot of money behind developing a brand new website that will be way more competitive and way easier for us to be able to manipulate. Right now, everything we want to do essentially has to go to a web server and fix and all that. We want things that we can do internally. We want things that'll work from a mobile platform out, where before we did it from desktop to mobile, now we're doing it from mobile to desktop, going where the future is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, what was the question?
Sam Ash in the next 3 years, and you said that's okay, the next 3 years. What about the next 10?
The next 3 years, yeah, and hopefully a few more stores. And in the next 10, hopefully, my sons will know the P.O. box to send my checks to.
Life goals.
I just turned 62. We don't retire in this business. My father worked until he was 91. He's still alive, thank God. My mother worked until she was 83. She's alive, thank God. My uncle died on his way to work at the age of 84.
Oh my gosh.
My grandmother retired at the age of 83. This is kind of what we do. I have no retirement plan because I don't know how to retire. I'm going to do this hopefully as long as it's fun and exciting. And right now it's fun and exciting. Is it hard work? Absolutely. I don't see you getting one without the other. And in 10 years, these five kids, five men, and the people that they bring up, their Howies and Barrys, their 40-year-old veterans will grow up with them. That's what I see in 10 years from now. I see a tighter organization. I see a smarter organization. And hopefully a larger one too.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, in order to make more profits, and sometimes you have to make more profit centers. It's just that simple. This industry will not allow you to go and make 50 points. It's just not going to happen. So you just have to have more places where the profits come in from.
Yeah, you either open more locations or you find new profit centers. That's basically how you grow it.